You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're excited to have part two of our interview with Lori Higgins of the Illinois Family Institute. Americans for Truth is an organization that is opposed to the homosexual activist movement. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org, AmericansForTruth.org. You can write us at AmericansForTruth@Comcast.net. That's AmericansForTruth@Comcast.net. If you are interested in supporting an organization that opposes the hugely funded homosexual activist movement, then go to our website, send us a donation, sign up as a monthly Truth team member, which is a monthly giver. We need all the help we can get. Also support Illinois Family Institute. They're a fine organization. And that brings us to our interview with Lori Higgins. Lori is a friend and a gifted writer with the Illinois Family Institute. Their website, again, illinoisfamily.org. I encourage you to sign up for her emails. And we have a lot to get to today because Lori is an excellent responder to homosexual activist arguments. And I believe she is gifted in that way. She uses excellent reason. Her writing skills are terrific. And she really deconstructs some of the common arguments we hear in society today. Lori, welcome to the Americans for Truth Hour.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me again.
Yes, and last week's interview is already on our website at AmericansForTruth.org. And I should say also that every interview you hear on WYLL, this Americans for Truth Hour, is available online, and you can download it at AmericansForTruth.org. Lori, let's start by getting at some of the arguments. Well, let me back up. You are a Christian, correct?
Right.
Why don't you explain to me, I assume you believe that homosexuality is immoral.
Correct.
Why do you think that is, and can you explain how you would tell others what the golden rule is as applied to homosexuality?
Well, first, getting to the question about why homosexuality is wrong, this, especially in the days leading up to Day of Silence and Day of Silence Walkout, I was interviewed a lot, including by some high school and college kids, and that question came up a lot. And
before you do that, explain Day of Silence, quickly what that is.
The Day of Silence is the political effort sponsored by the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network that urges kids to remain silent in class in support of the homosexual agenda. They'll say it's centrally about bullying, but they neglect to say that the means by which they seek to end bullying is by normalizing homosexuality. Excuse me. So the question arose a lot about that, and I know the reason it's often asked is that they will ask it of Christians, excuse me, why do you believe homosexuality is wrong? Hoping that you will say, because of your religious faith, in which case they can then say, excuse me, Pete, hold on one second, I have to get a drink of water.
Well, while you're doing that, we'll say that Illinois Family Institute led the efforts to oppose the Day of Silence, and you can get more information about that on illinoisfamily.org.
And then after you, I would say, if I were to say, my first response to be that this grows out of my religious convictions, then they will say, well, that violates the separation of church and state, which, of course, is an absurd proposition, and I don't think we have time to get into that today, but Christians need to have a better understanding of what the separation of church and state means. But what I ask these interviewers is, it's a great question, and it's a question all of us have to ask about all of our moral convictions. When we arrive at any moral conclusions about whether a behavior is moral or immoral, how do we arrive at that conclusion? What's the basis on which we decide that? And so, you know, I mean, there's a number of sort of big categories of moral bases for determining conduct, what constitutes moral conduct. Some people are radical subjectivists, meaning they don't think that there are any objective truths, or they claim that they don't believe that there is, that everyone decides for themselves. It's only our subjective feelings that determine what's right or wrong. Some people will say they're, you know, maybe not using the term, but they are, in effect, John Stuart Mill's utilitarians. They say, well, whatever constitutes the greatest good for the greatest number of people. But then, of course, you're left with defining the good, and on what basis do you decide that? Other people follow faith traditions, and then it's, which faith tradition is it? Are you Muslim? Are you an Orthodox Jew? Are you a Reformed Jew? Are you a Catholic and you follow the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church? Are you Protestant? And if so, which denomination? Do you attend a church that affirms gay theology? And that question is never posed to liberals who are working in public schools. No one asks them, well, what church do you affirm? And if you which church do you attend? And if you attend a church that affirms gay theology, do your political beliefs constitute a violation of church and state? So I think those are the big questions that everybody has to answer. And then, of course, there's natural law, which is, you know, you look at design in nature and derive your moral conclusions from that. I derive my moral conclusions from my very orthodox, small o, Christian faith, and natural law, observations about, you know, how do bodies fit together, how do humans procreate, and those are the bases on which I decide my moral convictions.
And as we alluded to last week, the question is never asked, why is homosexuality right?
Exactly.
Which is really the more appropriate question.
It is. It's the more pressing question. Because the idea that volitional homosexual acts are moral and natural, which is another word that needs to be examined, is the ahistorical, radical view. Of course, there have always been people who have engaged in homosexual acts, but the idea that these are moral has always been a subversive and ahistorical and minority position.
Do you think it's advanced now by certain homosexual activists such as Kai Feldblum, who's Obama's new appointee to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and a radical homosexual activist? Do you think it's advanced now, Lori, because the opportunity exists in a culture that is increasingly devoid of religion or true faith?
Well,
I mean, they can sort of pull it out of thin air. Yes, homosexuality is moral. We're as moral as you are, and just almost by saying it imply that it's true.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons that this can come to the foreground now. I think we have an increasingly unthinking culture. I think we have an intellectually lazy culture. So people don't really want to read deeply and think deeply on this issue, and they don't. And then we have, you know, public education that's dominated by liberal thinking, and they censor resources that articulate intelligent conservative arguments. We have Hollywood that promotes ideas simply through images that don't require people to think deeply and reason on these issues. And so it's easy now to come forward and make a claim, you know, any number of claims, that this is moral conduct, end of story. No one asks them to defend that. You know, homosexuality is ontologically equivalent to race. End of story. No one asks them to defend that with justifications, evidence, reason. And so there's a lot of, I think, cultural forces that are, you know, coming together to make it easy to make non-arguments and yet make cultural headway.
Right. And some of the shortcuts that we see the other side doing, I'm sure you've been accused many times of hating gays.
Well,
how does that make you feel, and how do you normally respond?
Well, I try to point out the problems with the logic of that argument. They're saying that because I say volitional homosexual acts are not moral, I hate homosexuals. Of course, they don't apply that principle consistently to their beliefs. They don't say that if they believe selfishness is immoral, selfish acts are immoral, that they therefore hate selfish people or people who engage in selfish acts. Or if they believe, if the other side believes that polyamorous acts are not moral.
Well, explain what polyamory is.
Polyamory is the romantic affiliation and sexual attraction to people, multiple people at the same time. And so,
instead of your better half, you have your better two-thirds, huh?
Exactly, or more than that. I mean, the number is, you know, not fixed. And so, and many people yet believe that polyamory is not moral, and no one who believes those behaviors are not moral are accused of hatred. And so I try to point that out. Of course, if I'm in a sort of a personal interaction with someone, I'll say, point out one sentence in which I have expressed hatred for persons. And the important point is, moral beliefs about behavior do not constitute hatred of persons. Of course, they can go together. I mean, you have Reverend Fred Phelps, who has moral beliefs, and apparently from his verbiage and his conduct, hates persons. But he's an aberration. He certainly doesn't represent the Christian community, and no one who's truly a Christian hates people, engages in hateful acts, and expressing moral beliefs does not constitute hatred, and no one lives their life as if it does. So
in effect, they're demonizing a whole belief system.
Exactly.
And America's traditional Judeo-Christian belief system.
Exactly. It serves their purposes because it silences cowardly Christians. They feel like, well, I don't want to be falsely accused of hatred, therefore I won't say anything. And of course, what happens is, into the vacuum that their silence creates, the lie is poured that we are all like Reverend Fred Phelps. And my argument is, the way to dispel that lie is to speak the truth with grace and treat people civilly. And pretty soon they can still say that our behavior,
We'll have to get back to that next time. We'll be right back in a minute. I'm talking with Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute. This is the Americans for Truth Hour. Everybody, you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth. We are an organization that opposes and exposes the homosexual, bisexual, transgender lobby movement. We're talking in part two of our interview with Lori Higgins, who is a writer for Illinois Family Institute. Lori is a superb writer. She is. I'm very glad that she's on our side and not the other side. Lori, we were talking about hate and the golden rule. So how would you interpret the golden rule as applied to the homosexual agenda and homosexuality in general?
Well, the golden rule is found in two passages, Luke 6:31 and Matthew 7:12. Usually you'll hear people quote it from Luke, but Matthew says, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. This means that Christians should affirm to others God's word, the entirety of God's word, in a godly way. It's absurd to suggest that in order to live out the golden rule faithfully, Christians must affirm every desire that another human experiences, including even sinful desires. The idea that homosexual conduct is immoral is consistent and explicit, and most biblical theologians and exegetes believe that the Bible teaches that homosexual acts are not moral. So, I mean, this idea that to treat others, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, means that you should affirm everything in them is simply absurd. I mean, that's not what I want as a Christian. I don't want my sinful desires and behaviors to be affirmed by others. I want my brothers and sisters in Christ to hold me accountable for right action.
So what we're talking about is lazy, worldly Christianity, in which somehow homosexuality is given sort of a special pass in the pantheon of sins, because we affirm this sort of identity, these quote-unquote gay or lesbian identity, as opposed to dealing with it like it's another sinful practice. Just as you said, we would love somebody. If, God forbid, if my son or daughter declared their homosexuality, I would not hate them. I would love them just the same as I always loved them. However, I would never affirm in them a homosexual identity.
Well, it all comes down to whether you believe homosexual behavior is moral or immoral. If it's not moral conduct, and as a Christian, the Bible teaches us it's not, it is not a loving act to affirm it in or to other people. That's simply not loving. I mean, this is unrepentant homosexual acts will keep people out of the kingdom. And so if you care about both the temporal consequences, the kind, particularly for male homosexuals, if you believe that if you care about them, you wouldn't want that for them. And if you care about their eternal life, you would not affirm that in them either.
Okay, so now comment, if you would, on this Southern Poverty Law Center designation of Americans for Truth, my organization. And at one time, I believe they also did it to your organization, Illinois Family Institute, as a hate site. We recently were designated as such by the SPLC. We don't hate homosexuals, but that doesn't matter. Comment on that idea that we are a hate group.
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center is unfortunately still a well-respected organization. People need to understand that they also have an educational arm called Teaching Tolerance that many ordinary lay people outside of the educational community are unaware of, but within the educational community, it's very, very well known. The Southern Poverty Law Center labels groups that are adamant and firm in their beliefs regarding homosexual behavior as hate groups, and they'll list them. I mean, you're not the only one. I think Traditional Values is on there. I'm forgetting now.
I think Mass Resistance, our friends, Brian Kamiker.
Brian Kamiker and Mass Resistance. The Illinois Family Institute was on for a while, and I actually spoken to Mark Potok. They said
he is the director of the SPLC.
Yes, the director of the Intelligence Report, or the Intelligence Project, which is the group that does all the listing of active U.S. hate groups.
Which seems to be at times bereft of intelligence. They confused me with Paul Cameron and left it on their website for years.
I've written two articles about them and my interactions with them, people can go on to the Illinois Family Institute and just search for Southern Poverty Law Center, and they'll find the articles, because Mark Potok was leaving voice messages. People who had called to complain about our inclusion on the hate groups list, he was calling and leaving voice messages, and we have a transcription of that, and it reveals the lack of intelligence on his part.
But if you would, since we don't have too much time, talk about this sort of like demonizing of a groups as haters. And of course, this becomes very powerful, because then on the web, as things get spread around, they say, well, you're an officially designated hate site.
That's right. And law enforcement agencies and public schools often use the SPLC's hate groups list for, you know, deciding. My understanding is there was a school in the Midwest somewhere where they were blocking from their library system at the school any groups that were on that, so students couldn't access our site. I just want to mention really quickly, they told us the only reason we were on there was that we had an article posted in 2005 by a researcher they don't like, and the article, all it said was that homosexual men have a shortened lifespan. And because they didn't like the researcher who we cited in a one-paragraph article, they put us on the hate groups list.
Yes, that's, and for clarification's sake, I was the person who posted that article. I was then executive director of Illinois Family Institute. But absolutely, how ridiculous that becomes the basis for these designations.
And there was no hate speech in this article. They just didn't like the researcher.
Right.
And they
quarrel with the facts and the authenticity of the research. But how many gay researchers are cited? And of course, for years, the gay movement came out with the idea that 10% of society was gay, which is ridiculous.
From the Kinsey report.
Right.
Kinsey is a notorious pervert, was a notorious pervert, who did experiments on infants, bringing them to orgasm, and he's so perverted.
Well, to clarify on that one, Lori, just for clarification's sake, he included research, Table 34, this is Alfred Kinsey in his landmark work, in which apparently it was the so-called research data of a pedophile, which is shocking. And I always tell people one of the most incredible stories or non-stories of the time was that this sexual research book came out in the 50s, and no enterprising reporter discovered that there was pedophile orgasm data in the book. Had they written about that, had they made a story about that, Dr. Alfred Kinsey might have been taken down. I mean, it's incredible that these sorts of things go on, because the media, and to this day it's the same way, the media does not do its job.
That's right. Does the SPLC go through every organization that still continues to cite Kinsey research and label them a hate group because of, he cited pedophile, the work of pedophiles, but if I'm not mistaken, there was research conducted on children at his institute. And so there's such inconsistency in the SPLC. They have a political bias.
Yes,
but the
reality is, and they know it, that the media and many other groups and all over the web, their designations are repeated again and again and again. And so, okay, so there's that idea of hatred again, that Christians hate gays. First of all, and comment if you would on the idea of the inherent gay. I mean, I don't believe there is such a thing. I believe there are people practicing homosexuality. I believe people can go from practicing heterosexuality to practicing homosexuality and vice versa. We've both met many former homosexuals. Comment on the idea of that there is a person who is inherently born innately, gay.
Well, there's no research, first of all. No research proving that homosexual attraction is biologically determined. That said, I want to make it clear, I do not think people choose their feelings. We choose how to respond to them. As a Christian, we believe that the fallen man is affected in every dimension of his life. So our feelings, our wills, our intellect, our bodies are all affected by the fall. So the fact that we have fallen or sinful or immoral impulses makes homosexuals share in common the nature of fallen man with all of us. And all of us, our task, we all experience myriad impulses, feelings, and attractions, and our task as moral beings is to decide which of those are appropriate to act upon. No one argues that because there may be biological influences that shape selfish desires or aggressive impulses or polyamorous impulses, that therefore those behaviors are inherently moral. But there is no research. There's no gay gene discovered, and I know there are people out in the culture who still believe that there was a gay gene discovered. So, no, I don't think that there is an immutable identity. And actually, there's a body of thinking that emerges from the homosexual community called queer theory that disagrees with the idea that homosexuality is 100% heritable and immutable. And that emerges from the gay community itself. And, of course,
right, they're starting to go towards the route of sexual freedom. Everybody should have the freedom to choose any sexual behavior that they want to choose.
That's right. That sexual orientation is socially constructed and that it's fluid. Now,
and also that the government should sort of ratify all equally. Are we moving towards that idea that the government should not favor any one set of behavior sexually than any other?
Well, I think that homosexual activist organizations want the government to ratify the all progressive assumptions about the nature and morality of homosexuality. I mean, you see it in all the anti-bullying bills and anti-discrimination bills that include the language of gender-related expression or gender-related identity. They don't even use the correct term, which is gender identity disorder. Transgenderism, I'm using my quote fingers, is still listed in the DSM as a disorder.
Okay, now we'll come right back. We're talking to Lori Higgins of Illinois Family Institute. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth, AmericansForTruth.org. Everybody, you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarber, president of Americans for Truth. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. We are an organization, a nonprofit organization dedicated to opposing the homosexual activist movement. And we're talking to Lori Higgins, who is my friend and a gifted writer with the Illinois Family Institute. You can sign up for their emails at illinoisfamily.org. Lori, you have specialized in sort of refuting the homosexual activist arguments. One of them these days is tolerance. Tolerance has been radically redefined in this modern age, hasn't it?
A lot of words have been radically redefined, and there, for me, coming out of a, working in a public school, it's particularly troubling because they use these terms redefined to try to transform the views of other people's children. And tolerance is probably the central problematic redefinition. Tolerance actually means to put up with or endure something that you find objectionable. Implicit in the idea of tolerance is disagreement and disapproval. You don't tolerate something that you, with which you agree or approve. And so true tolerance would mean allowing or enduring the expression of ideas, even ideas which we find offensive and wrong-headed. But in public schools and in the culture at large, this, they contend that society should be tolerant of homosexuality. What they really mean when they say that is that you should approve, affirm, or celebrate it. And so under the guise of promoting tolerance, for instance, in public schools, they offer only resources or activities that espouse liberal beliefs, and they censor. And it is pervasive censorship, absolute censorship of all resources that espouse conservative beliefs, which is completely inconsistent with the idea of tolerance.
So, yes.
You know, I would argue.
So in the average library, including in the schools and in the public libraries in most towns, and especially around big cities, there is a preponderance of information and books available that are pro-homosexuality, very few, if any, that
right.
oppose homosexuality or are about ex-gays who are former homosexuals.
To say it's a preponderance is being very generous. I have searched the public high school library of the school I worked in and discovered there were about 75 books on the topic. I use the search term sexual orientation, homosexuality, lesbian, gay. And there were about 10 that are written just for debate. And so they have both sides within each volume. But of the 65 remaining books that are written from a singular perspective, all 65 were written from a liberal perspective, espousing or embodying, and that includes fiction and nonfiction. I did it for another larger high school on the North Shore of Chicago, New Trier, and there were about 120 resources, zero written from a conservative perspective. And so, and I also tracked at Deerfield High School what students were exposed to. They didn't get through their freshman year without being exposed to resources or activities that espouse liberal views on homosexuality. And every year thereafter, these included novels, plays, essays, newspaper articles, speakers, films, and in all 4 years, they wouldn't read even a single essay by a conservative scholar. That's censorship, and I would think, you know, sort of ACLU types would be enraged about that.
Now it's very difficult to correct. Is that right, Lori? Because there is this sort of skewed process by which books are approved to get in libraries.
Yes, it's called collection development policies, which is, you know, if it weren't so serious, it would be pretty amusing. These collection development policies, it's the protocol libraries use for choosing books. And they say that a book has to be positively reviewed by one of their professionally recognized review journals. Well, of course, the professionally recognized review journals are all liberal. So they either don't review or don't review positively books written from a conservative perspective on the topic of homosexuality. So the process is set up to keep these books out. It's hard even to get a book published, but I had a meeting with the principal at the time of Deerfield High School where I was working, and I said, don't you think that ideological diversity or parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y, is more important than protocols? I mean, wouldn't you think 65-1 might be an important balance to try to achieve in the library? And she conceded yes, but they did nothing about it. And I even recommended books. One in particular that was I wrote to the editor, Christopher Wolf, a professor, and asked him if his book had been positively reviewed. And it had been by First Things, which is a very prestigious journal. And it's not one of their professionally recognized journals. So they did have, as last time I checked, still zero books written.
So it's rigged. And you mentioned an important word. You said ideological diversity. So in the name of diversity, diverse views are blocked out because they happen to oppose the politically correct viewpoint that homosexuality is basically just a civil rights issue.
Of course. And they engage in censorship in order to promote their view. And they'll use the sometimes you'll hear someone say, well, conservative views will make those kids who identify as homosexual feel bad. Someone asked me at my when I was working at the high school if I realized that some of the things that I say are hurtful. And so I thought about her comment, and I wrote her later and said her question implies this idea that the ethical legitimacy of speech is determined by the subjective response of people around us. So if someone around us doesn't like our statement, even if we've articulated it graciously and it includes no hate rhetoric whatsoever, that makes that speech morally unethical. Well, of course, if you applied that principle consistently, no one could make any moral claims publicly. You couldn't say adultery is wrong because someone around you might be committing adultery and feel bad.
Do you think this is consciously manipulative, this idea, oh, what you're saying is hurtful, or do you think it's just a product of a lazy culture in which people aren't thinking anymore?
Well, I think both. I think there are some who are quite deliberate and strategic in leveling that charge at people that what you've said is hurtful, and knowing how it's going to impact a culture that is squishy intellectually and completely driven by emotional subjective responses. And I think there's this great book that I recommend everyone read called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman, who was a communication professor at NYU, who talked about what happens to a culture, a television-based culture, and how they lose their capacity for thinking logically and reasoning and engaging in deductive arguments. And I think also that you see it if you read After the Ball by Kirk and Madsen, which, you know, articulated, I think they called it somewhere in the introduction of the book, the Gay Manifesto.
This is a book that's a homosexual activist strategy manual for marketing homosexuality to the culture. It was written in the 80s.
Exactly. And they articulate these strategies using psychological processes and marketing techniques to manipulate the emotions of people.
Okay, now I'm going to cut you off there because we've only got one more segment and 3 minutes in this one. You talked about the books. One of the arguments for including all these gay books and hardly any from the other side is safety. And the idea that we have to make gay kids feel safe. Talk about how that is used and how it manipulates the whole argument and debate.
Well, I mean, conventionally, safety would refer to the absence of verbal or physical harassment or abuse. But now safety has acquired this rather expansive redefinition. It has now come to mean absence of uncomfortable feelings. And so they're really using safety for comfort. They're saying it makes kids feel unsafe to hear conservative views about the morality of homosexuality when really it makes them uncomfortable. I mean, there's no evidence to suggest that a thoughtful, thorough, intelligent articulation of mainstream conservative views of homosexuality, which stand in stark contrast to the ignorant hate speech of Fred Phelps, that those kinds of the expression of those ideas would in any way endanger the safety of homosexual students. And so, but if we consistently apply the principle of safety that's currently used in schools, it would, again, preclude the possibility of making any moral judgments. So, I mean, we couldn't say that, you know, smoking is bad or selfishness or plagiarism or promiscuity because those students who are engaging those behaviors would feel bad. Of course, they never apply this to the implicit condemnation of conservative Christian or Orthodox views, Orthodox Jewish views, or Muslim views of homosexuality that are implicit in all these liberal resources in schools.
Well, I'll take it a step further, Lori. Think about the word homophobia. The idea is that you have this irrational discomfort and don't know how to be around homosexuals. Here, the liberals are basically saying, this makes us uncomfortable. We can't tolerate it. We can't have it.
That's right.
You know,
if schools are unwilling to allow homosexual students to encounter resources critical of homosexuality because they might feel uncomfortable, then schools should be equally unwilling to allow conservative students to encounter resources critical of conservative beliefs and people for the same reason.
Right. Of course, that's not going to happen. Okay, we got a minute before the break. Start talking about the bigotry, bias, and prejudice, the common accusation against, you know, you oppose homosexuality, you are a bigot, you are the moral equivalent of a racist.
Well, if people would bother to look the words up in the dictionary, they would find that prejudice, for example, refers to an unfavorable opinion or feeling formed beforehand or without knowledge, thought, or reason. Bias means, it also means something similar. It's generally been defined as uninformed or unintentional inclination. As such, opinions formed, even negative opinions, after careful consideration, do not represent prejudice. So if I've read deeply and thought deeply and I come to the conclusion that some particular act is not moral, it doesn't constitute bias or bigotry or prejudice. And I certainly, and I think many others, have thought deeply about homosexuality and come to the conclusion that it's not moral conduct. Our feelings about...
Well, I'll have to cut you off there, Lori. Okay. Of course, it's much easier to just call you a homophobe and be done with it.
Exactly.
We're talking to Lori Higgins. We'll be back in a minute. Everybody, you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth. We're an organization that opposes the powerful homosexual activist movement. Our website is americansfortruth.org. If you agree with what we're saying or you oppose the ubiquitous gay propaganda that's all over our culture, go to americansfortruth.org and make a donation. Become a Truth Team giver. That's a monthly giver. We need all the help we can get. We have a very difficult task because not only is the gay lobby promoting homosexuality, but the media and academia and pop culture. We're in our final segment of part two of our interview with Lori Higgins of the Illinois Family Institute. Their website is illinoisfamily.org. I encourage you to support them. Support Lori's work. She is just an outstanding writer. Lori, you're talking about bigotry and bias and this idea that we're prejudiced if we oppose homosexuality. Talk about the equation that's commonly thrust out there of people who oppose homosexual so-called marriage, equating that to opposition to interracial marriage of a bygone era.
Well, there's a couple of points to be made about that. The first is that the analogy between homosexuality and race is completely flawed, and no one is asked to defend it. Race is 100% heritable. It has no behavioral implications that are open for moral assessment. Homosexuality is not 100% heritable, is not immutable, and certainly the behavior that emerges from those desires, if acted upon, is perfectly legitimate to assess morally. But Dennis Prager has made some really important clarifications about this comparison of opposition to same-sex marriage.
He is a conservative talk show host.
That's right. And as has Thomas Sowell, who is an African-American scholar at Stanford's Hoover Institution. And Dennis Prager said there are enormous differences between men and women, but there are no differences between people of different races. Men and women are inherently different, but blacks and whites and yellows and browns are inherently the same. Therefore, any imposed separation by race can never be moral or even rational. On the other hand, separation by sex can be both morally desirable and rational. And so that's why bans on interracial marriage were reprehensible and unjustifiable. But when you ban same-sex marriage, you're not discriminating based on something defensible. I mean, if you have a ban on same-sex marriage, you are making a judgment based on something sensible, because men and women are by nature different. So if a black man who wants to marry a white woman, a black man who wants to marry a white woman is seeking to do the same action that a white man who wants to marry a white woman seeks to do, a law that prohibits an interracial marriage is wrong because it is based on who the person is, not on what he seeks to do. If a man wants to marry a man, he is seeking to do an entirely different action from that which a man who wants to marry a woman seeks to do. And that's a really important distinction. You're discriminating on behavior, not on the nature of someone.
Yes, right. And civilized societies must discriminate against behaviors. The question is now, will our civilized society become uncivilized and start discriminating based on against moral viewpoints and essentially against Judeo-Christian viewpoints.
And even homosexuals are acknowledging that there's a difference between men and women. If a homosexual man says he prefers only men, he's saying there's a difference between men and women, and therefore an institution that's composed of two different genders is by nature, is ontologically different from an institution composed of two of the same gender. And society is perfectly legitimate in saying this institution, a heterosexual institution, better serves the needs of society. And it better serves the needs of society because it better serves the needs of children. And so we have to understand that. Marriage is not, the government's involvement in marriage is not centrally about the private feelings and sexual attractions of people. It's about the common good. If it was just about people's feelings, their emotional and sexual feelings, there would be no reason for the government to be involved in the institution of marriage at all. The government doesn't care who loves whom or who is sexually attracted to whom. They care. The government cares about what serves society. And
Lori, let me cut you off there because we've got 4.5 minutes left. But quickly, before we get to the legislation that's coming down the pike, how do you answer the idea in 30 seconds? Oh, Lori, you're just prejudiced against gays.
Well, I mean, prejudice means an ill-formed position on some particular group of people, and my position is not ill-formed. In addition, I don't hate anyone who identifies as homosexual. I believe that homosexual acts are not moral, and I don't think society needs to affirm a different moral view. There's no sort of ethical obligation to do that, to adopt radical, subversive, ahistorical understandings of the morality of homosexual acts.
Okay, now we've got 3.5 minutes left. I wish we had a whole other segment because you're great to talk to. But there's the Student Non-Discrimination Act coming down the pike. This would do what, and why is it so dangerous?
Well, the Student Non-Discrimination Act would prohibit public school students from being excluded from participating in any federally assisted educational program on the basis of their actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. And so this would render the act of making common sense distinctions between boys and girls illegal. I mean, we have to ask the question, what would this mean? Would this mean that high schools that receive federal funds would be prohibited from excluding a boy who wishes he were a girl from participating in, for example, girls' sports?
So we're coming to that radical definition of gender identity. It's what you think you are.
That's right.
Is how you must be treated.
That's right. I mean, this is just absurd that society has now come to treat people's sexual confusion and a psychological disorder as if it has some objective, real status. I mean, here in Illinois and many states, people can have their sexual body parts amputated and then have their driver's license changed to say that they're now a woman or they're now a man. Of course, this is absurd. I've made this case before. My mother had breast cancer and had a mastectomy. She was no less female after her breasts were removed than she was beforehand. So this is just an absurd proposition, and now we're expecting, and this Student Non-Discrimination Act, which was proposed by a homosexual representative, Jared Polis, in Colorado. It's HR 4530. This would apply to elementary schools also. And once you have policy like this applying to elementary schools, it means that soon thereafter, there will be other kinds of resources introduced to students that define transgenderism, define gender-related identity and expression.
So it becomes the gateway for pro-homosexual propaganda, even
exactly.
More getting in with the federal imprimatur, you know, just another reason to promote it in schools.
That's right. And there have been in schools, like in California in the Alameda School District, they have found that if these ideas are introduced through anti-bullying resources, then parents have no right to opt out and no right to be notified.
Quickly, with 30 seconds, the same thing applies to ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. That's a non-discrimination law from the federal government, which would mean that all, say, a transgender teacher, there would be no recourse for parents to do anything about their child being taught by a man who decides he wants to become a woman.
That's right. And we also have the Safe Schools Improvement Act.
20 seconds, Lori.
Okay, sorry. The Safe Schools Improvement Act is another act that's coming down the pike that is problematic. It addresses the same issues.
Yeah, so we're talking about the promotion of homosexuality
right.
in schools. Lori, thank you so much for being on the show. We wish you the best. You can subscribe to Lori Higgins' emails or IFI's emails at illinoisfamily.org. Or you could subscribe to Americans for Truths at AmericansForTruth.org. Our website, again, AmericansForTruth.org. Give us a donation if you can. We'll be back next week. And we just urge you to take action on this legislation. Go to Congress.org and take action. Thank you very much.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.